Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on American Family Radio on this Wednesday, October the 23rd. I'm Tim Wildman, as the announcer just told you, and Ed Battagliano is co-hosting with me today. Ed's with me all week because our brother Ray is traveling, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's somewhere far afield preaching the gospel.
Yeah.
He was in Alaska, and then someone said he was going to be in Singapore or something preaching. So He's a fine Bible teacher, so I certainly encourage people to invite him to, you know, their conferences. Or
tell you what we're going to have him do in the near future. Let me introduce Fred first before we tell you what. Fred, good morning to you.
Great to be here.
Fred Jackson. Ray just is an excellent Bible teacher.
Yeah.
And I heard him teach on the book of Daniel, and just wow.
Yeah.
It is all I got to say. So we're going to have him record that soon. A video recording?
Oh, do like one of our cultural institutes with American Family Studios? That's a great idea.
What we'll do is we'll do a video recording of him teaching Daniel and then offer it to our listeners because I think they're going to love it.
They will love it. Now, I know we're not actually discussing it right now, but discuss it right now. I heard him at one of our AFA retreats.
Yeah.
You asked him because we had someone who was scheduled and they had an emergency and had to leave, and you asked Ray to teach the book of Daniel in 1 hour. You remember that? I think we need to give him a little bit more time.
No, we're going to give him more time than that. He sort of, that's what you call,
teach the book of Daniel in 1 hour.
What they
and
call
he did a phenomenal job. But
the old expression, drinking out of a fire hydrant.
Yes.
That's kind of what that was. But anyway, pray for Brother Ray. Talking about Ray Pritchard. He is traveling the world, and he's fully recovered from his accident last spring. So, you know, where he fell off his 10-speed. Well, fell off because he hit a patch of ice there in Kansas City.
Broke his leg in like three places. It was a very serious injury.
I hurt just hearing about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so will he be back next Tuesday? You know, Brent? Tuesday,
I think he's in November.
November 4th. Oh, November. Won't be back till November anyway. All right. Again, thanks for listening. Tell folks how they can join us on that there internet.
Happy to do that on that there internet. If you go to either Facebook or YouTube, you can search for Today's Issues, click through, and you will be able to watch this program and hear it, video and audio. It's streamed on Facebook.
Is it in
and
stereo?
YouTube. I would think that would it is available in stereo. It would depend on what.
I would
sort
want
of,
it in stereo if I were listening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, how about surround sound?
And 3D.
Yeah, surround sound.
Do we have 3D glasses for this show? Do we? Do you know?
No, I do know, and no, we don't.
No, we don't. Okay. All right. And if you want to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net. Fred, what's happening this morning?
There are Democrats this morning regretting the evolution in technology of having their voices recorded.
Okay.
All right.
This is a great story.
It's a great story. You will probably by now have witnessed television newscasts, newspapers, condemning President Trump the other day when he was talking about what the Democrats have been doing with regards to their efforts for impeachment, et cetera, he told Republicans, he said, Republicans are witnessing a lynching.
Who said that?
President Trump.
Okay.
All right. Almost immediately, and I'm not exaggerating here, folks, yesterday, in the wake of that comment from President Trump, almost every second story that rolled up in our Associated Press, I want to call it Wire, it's not Wire anymore, but almost every second story was somebody condemning the president for using the term lynching. Among those condemning the president, former Vice President Joe Biden. Listen to what Joe Biden had to say Impeachment is not lynching. It is part of our Constitution. Our country has a dark, shameful history with lynching. And to even think about making this comparison is abhorrent. It's despicable. Now, I kind of wonder to myself, I wonder if there's any Democrats that ever used the term lynching, let's say when Bill Clinton was impeached proceedings against Bill. I wonder if there were any Democrats that used that term lynching.
I would say no. If I was a betting man, I'd say no. Now, let me just say, I'm a little tongue-in-cheek here. Let me first say, since I'm going to proceed to mock Democrats, okay, tongue-in-cheek, there's nothing funny about the term lynching.
No.
Folks, we're serious about that. That was a dark part of our history.
Yes.
I think the president's choice of words there and using a description of what's happening with the impeachment thing as lynching was unfortunate because I don't think it's like comparing something to the Holocaust.
Yes.
You got to be very careful because your suffering is not that.
Yeah.
Okay. So having said that was very dark, I am going to say that Democrats would understand that and would never, ever think of using the term lynching to describe something that's happening to them or even the impeachment process against Bill Clinton. So that's my vote. I say no, absolutely not. No Democrat.
Let us go back to 1998. Joe Biden, in an interview with Wolf Blitzer at CNN, and he's talking how disgusted he is with the impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton. Here's what Joe Biden and how he was speaking and how he referenced the impeachment effort.
Don't disappoint me, Joe.
Okay, cut number three.
Even if the president should be impeached, history is going to question whether or not this was just a partisan lynching or whether or not it was something that, in fact, met the standard, the very high bar that was set by the founders as to what constituted an impeachable offense.
Okay, wait a minute. That was the same Joe Biden who said what yesterday?
He said it was abhorrent and despicable. That Donald Trump had used that term.
Yeah. Well, that just goes to show you, once again, and this happens almost on a daily basis, the Democrats and the liberal news media, they get up every day. I feel sorry for them. I really do, because they have Trump derangement syndrome.
Right. It's a terrible affliction.
And it affects everything they do.
Yes.
And so they can't let anything the president does. If President Trump walks out in the Rose Garden and picks a rose, they're gonna say, "My goodness, does this man have no shame? These are beautiful flowers, and he just picks one out of
the killed it.
Just killed it.
Yeah.
With that, and he doesn't care. And he doesn't care. And what is that doing to the environment?
Yes.
Okay? That's what they would do.
Climate change.
Because here you have Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. He said this is abhorrent that you would even use the term lynching. And he did the very same thing.
He did the same
thing. Under the same circumstances.
Under the same circumstances.
Except he flipped the political parties.
So they don't even remember that. They just look for anything they can do to go after President
Trump. Now, after this got out in the media, I'm sure that former Vice President Joe Biden admitted he was wrong and then said, "I shouldn't have been so hard on the president."
You're right on the first part. He apologized for what he said in 1998, but he still thinks the president was way out of line, even though the president kind of did the same thing Joe Biden did.
Yeah.
But Joe Biden's not the only one that's been caught.
Can I just add a little something to, because we all are putting a little tongue in cheek here, folks. You know what Vice President Joe Biden said? He said, "Yes, I shouldn't. I apologize for having done that in 1998. But Trump purposefully chose his words carefully to sow racial discord."
Yeah.
That's what Joe Biden said. That's how he differentiated what he did in 98 and what the president did. He said, "I'm sorry for what I did in 98, but the president chose the word purposefully to spread racism in our country."
How do you get racism out of saying something was a political lynching? That's just nutty.
Yes.
That's nutty, and it's just false on its face.
And how would Joe Biden know why the president did it? Because, to your point, Tim, they have Trump derangement syndrome. They see everything through those dark-colored glasses, when it comes to President Trump. Now, fortunately, none of the other Democrats have ever done this. So
I'm sorry, Ed. You are mistaken.
Again?
You about used up your sarcasm. I gave you four sarcasms for the day, and you burned three of them in the first 10 minutes.
All right. No more sarcasm.
Yesterday, Texas Democrat Al Green, up in the House, expressing great outrage over what President Trump had to say two days earlier.
Though.
All right, cut number six.
How dare the president compare lynching to impeachment? How dare he do this? Does he not know the history of lynching in this country? Does he not know that thousands of African Americans were lynched, mob violence? Does he not know that this is the equivalent of murder? How dare the president compare?
All right, so that was Congressman Al Green yesterday.
Right.
Let's go back to 1998. Here is Congressman Al Green, cut number seven.
The inequities in the impeachment process have been glaring. What we are doing or what we are doing here is not a prosecution, it's a persecution. And indeed, it is a political lynching.
That was Congressman Al Green, 1998.
Man. That's beautiful.
And there's more. We could spend the rest of the program.
I'll give you three more.
Okay, good.
I'll give you three more.
We can't let that one pass. That was an Academy Award right there. I mean, we can't let that one pass. This is Al Green from Texas, not Al Green from Memphis, right?
That's right.
Okay. Different Al Green.
Because I had my Al Greens mixed up there for just a minute. That was classic. That guy yesterday, Al Green, congressman from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, okay, I'll just phrase it that way. You guys may not agree with me, and I don't know the gentleman. I'm sure he's a fine person. That was an act. That sounded like me. Sounded like to me that was staged. It was acting.
Fake outrage.
It was fake outrage. Yeah. Even if President Trump, he did say it's been a lynching.
Right.
Even if he did that, what this guy's saying was that is the worst thing anybody has ever done in the history of being a president. That's what he sounded like to me. Me thinks a little overreaction there.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that was theater. Okay. I'm not saying you can't feel offended by the president using that terminology, although I think, you know what? People use words all the time, and if you're going to have to hanging, can we not say, well, you know, they about went out and hung that guy. Can we not use that word anymore? I know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, do we have to watch every single word we say and we can't use it because somehow in the past it was used, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Mm-hmm.
To discriminate against people or to, in this case, kill people with lynchings. But I just think that was fake outrage. And furthermore, he did the very same thing. He's saying Trump should be, that he's crying about Trump doing.
Right.
Yep.
So again, you're two for two, Fred.
Yep.
You got Al Green, not from Memphis, from Texas.
Uh-huh.
And you got Joe Gap Biden.
Yeah.
Who's they come out and just lash out at Trump yesterday. And guess what? We got him on tape.
Yep.
Thank God for C-SPAN.
Yep.
That's what I got.
And there's more.
Okay.
In 1998. It was the term lynching was a favorite term of the Democrats,
right?
All condemning the Republicans for going after Bill Clinton. Let me play you a little what we call a montage here. Democrats, this is 1998, Democrat Jim McDermott of Washington, Danny Davis of Illinois, and John Kerry of Massachusetts. Those are the voices you're going to hear in that order, all using that term. Go ahead.
We're taking a step down the road to becoming a political lynch mob.
I will not vote for this lynching in the people's house.
What you have going on here is a very unfortunate process of a verbal lynching.
So there you have it. Democrat after Democrat after Democrat in 1998, all using that term.
Now, that little montage you just played, was that from CNN? Is this so bad that even CNN was running some
CNN
stuff?
Okay. That was just a montage of them getting up in the house.
Okay, yeah. All right.
But here's the thing. I was here in 1998. I don't remember the media calling the Democrats to task for using that term over and over and over again.
I was here too.
But yesterday, the media went absolutely nuts. Now, they know the president condemns what happened in this country many years ago, lynching. They know President Trump condemns that.
Right.
But they hate Donald Trump so much, we're going to make headlines out of what the term that he used.
That's what I'm saying. They get up every day. And I'm not saying that President Trump doesn't do some things that invites.
He's not very careful with his language.
No, I'm not saying.
And you will get offended eventually.
Yeah, I mean he can do some things too.
I didn't like the fact that he uses profanity sometimes at his at his rallies.
Yes. Right. By the way, I talked to somebody who said you need to cut that out.
Yeah, who told the president.
Who told the president, you need to cut that out. You're going to lose people.
Right.
But anyway, the point is that that these folks are, you know, they're opportunists. That's all they are. They're political opportunists because they did the same thing. They weren't outraged at themselves, but they did the very same thing that they say they're outraged at. It hurt.
They didn't apologize for not being careful with their language.
No, because they don't care. It's all about how can we beat up Donald Trump today.
Right.
Give me today. We want to beat him up every single day. You know, that's where, and that's why I think a lot of people are tired of it and see through it. And you know, if this gentleman here from Texas had been consistent and not done the very same thing he's going after Trump for, then I might give him a hearing.
Right.
You know, I might say, okay, he's got a point. No, he doesn't have a point. He did the very same thing that he's saying the president was abhorred.
Right.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, Trump Derangement Syndrome. It's out there and it's real.
TDS.
TDS. All right, what next story, Fred?
But things are looking up for the Democrats.
How are they now, Fred?
They have a wonderful field of candidates to be president.
There we go, sarcasm again. I don't know what I'm going to do with you two guys. I really don't. I mean, I try to set a professional standard here on this program. I use sarcasm, maybe once a month? Myself, as I'm using it right now.
It's October 23rd. It's National Sarcasm Day.
We need to
celebrate.
So what do you got, Fred?
You know the Democrats are in trouble when the Washington Post runs a story, headline, Democrats see weak spots in their own 2020 prospects. No kidding. And they go on to quote a bunch of Democrats who are kind of worried about the field right now. I think most of the polls still have Joe Biden up on top,
right?
Followed closely behind by Elizabeth Warren and then Bernie Sanders. And this story, it's quite a lengthy story. They're worried about Biden because of the gaffes and the stories about what he did when he was vice president, Ukraine.
He's also not raising very much money.
He's got problems money-wise. And then they admit that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are way, way, way to the left. All right? And all the others are still in single digits and having trouble. I think, was it Cory Booker the other day or Castro, I think it was, who said if he doesn't get $800,000 in the next few days, he's done.
Well, Cory Booker was in that situation, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, because some of them are getting nixed from debates, or they run the risk of not being allowed at Democrat debates because you have to have three standards.
Yeah,
those people you just mentioned have zero chance to win. Why do they think they do?
I don't know. Some people say sometimes a person runs in order to be considered for a cabinet position.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, I can understand.
Or vice president.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, or build your brand so
you
next
can run
time
next
an election.
Time. Okay. I see that.
It's interesting. This story, the Washington Post, quotes John Cole, who is a major donor to both Bill and Hillary Clinton, was very blunt, the story says. Here's a quote from him. They, referring to the Democrats, don't have anybody who can win the general election. That's what he's saying. These people are being quoted. Oprah Winfrey suggesting that maybe she likes Disney CEO Bob Iger.
Yeah.
She's hoping he would step in there. But did you read something where he's not interested?
No, that was Howard Schultz, the former
CEO
of Starbucks. He was considering a run or maybe even a third party run, but he's not interested in that.
And the story goes on to say, you know, Beto O'Rourke, Kamala Harris, they're out. They don't have a prayer. Pete Buttigieg, I think, has done well in an Iowa poll in the last few days. But they quote here, I guess, an assessment made by black voters, I think it was in South Carolina, a concern underscored Tuesday by a leaked memo detailing a focus group of black South Carolina voters who expressed discomfort with Buttigieg being a homosexual. So he's not getting any traction in the black community, which most candidates for president, they have to have the African-American
vote.
Wow,
they're a bunch of bigots. Why can't he get any traction over there?
Apparently, it doesn't appeal to them.
Well, I think that the church plays a pretty important role in the black community.
Yes.
And I think that probably most black churches still believe the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have that influence. And now Buttigieg was at 13% in Iowa, Elizabeth Warren 17%, and Joe Biden 18%. So that's a pretty good little jump for Mayor Pete, you know.
How you pronounce his last name?
Buttigieg.
Say it three times fast.
Buttigieg, Buttigieg, Buttigieg.
Pretty good.
That's not bad.
That was good just off the, you know, me to put you on the spot like
that. Right. So I did. By the way, the New York Times, their headline here, anxious Democratic establishment asks, is there anybody else?
Yes.
That's pretty funny.
That's been going on behind the scenes the last several weeks.
Is there anybody else who can
We're
do this?
We're in trouble.
Yeah.
I can just see this like a tryouts for a tryouts for a baseball team or something, and everybody gets, and you got all these, you got nine people up there swinging and missing.
You ever seen the movie Invincible?
About
the player who wanted to play for the Eagles?
Mark
Wahlberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had open trials. It was true, really happened. Yeah. They had open tryouts. I guess it was Veterans Stadium back then, and they all the losers who showed up to try to get a spot on the Philadelphia Eagles, and that's what this is kind of like for the Democrats.
It's like nine people struck out. is there anybody else out here?
Yes.
Anybody? Did anybody go to the restroom or are they late?
Before we send y'all home.
Yeah, before we send y'all home, we just want to make sure we got everybody here. Is trying out, because as it stands right now, we're not going to field a team.
That's right.
We're not going to embarrass ourselves. Anyway.
But to that point, there's more to this story.
Okay.
Here's the headline. Hillary Clinton mulling 2020 run, citing weak Dem field claim of email vindication.
Who?
Hillary.
Hillary.
Hillary Clinton.
She's mulling.
She's mulling.
A 2020 run.
Boy, I got to tell you.
Tulsi Gabbard going to be a team.
That is not, if she throws her hat into the ring,
is
not going to help.
Witch hat?
Yes, on Drudge Report.
I'm not saying she's a witch. I'm saying there's a photograph of Hillary Clinton that's famous now with her, her Halloween witch hat on.
The black hat. And that's that is the picture on Drudge Report. It says Democrat Halloween, Hillary leaves the door open.
Right. So you're saying... I was just wanting to clarify which hat she was throwing in the ring.
Yes, I'm saying if she decides to run, that is not going to help Democrats feel good about the 2020 election.
No.
Right. She's run for president twice.
Right. Yes.
She didn't just get beaten by Donald Trump. She got beaten by Barack Obama. Uh-huh.
Politically speaking, she's at the retirement home.
Yes.
And somebody's calling her saying, hey, can you still throw it?
Yeah. This is like we're going to call Nolan Ryan and say, hey, come on, we need you in the bullpen.
Easy, man. One more game. Can you come back? We'll. All right, we shall return momentarily with more of today's issues.
I am not being sarcastic.
I know you're not. Even that was, anyway. All right, we shall return momentarily with more of today's issues. Abraham Hamilton III will join us. We got some topics for Abe to... We'll get his reaction to after this short timeout. Stay with us.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Dr. Frank Turek of Cross Examine.
Can human beings construct an objective moral standard independent of God? Are God's commands based on God's desires? Are they based on God's authority? or something else.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, on our tour of the Holy Land in March, one of the places we'll stop is called the House of Caiaphas. This is the place where Jesus experienced the mock trial in front of the Sanhedrin that you read about in the Bible before he was taken to Pilate. He was actually held there in that house. We go there. We visit there. We see where that was. And then right beside the house are steps that date back to the time of Christ. They're stone steps that date back to the time of Christ. Those were the very steps that Jesus walked from the Garden of Gethsemane as he was brought to this mock trial at the House of Caiaphas. That's just one of the places we'll visit in March on our Holy Land tour. For all the information on this March 12th through the 20th trip, go to twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. If you believe that 1 plus 1 equals 2, you might be a racist. That's according to the Seattle School District. They're planning to infuse math class with ethnic studies questions. They're teaching the kids that math was appropriated by Western culture and used in systems of power and oppression. The school district says it's all part of a movement to rehumanize math. The district's framework includes lessons on how math and science have been used to oppress and marginalize people of color. Another theme focuses on resistance and liberation. Now, what that has to do with long-form division or teaching a kid how to balance a checkbook is beyond me. Education Week says woke math grew out of a campaign led by the NAACP as a way to introduce something called ethno-mathematics. All that to say, good luck finding a cashier down at the Walmart who can make change. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. If you'd like to send us an email, you can go to comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net. I'm Tim with Ed and Fred, and we thank you for listening to the program. Joining us, as he does most Wednesdays, is Abraham Hamilton III, Public Policy Analyst and General Counsel for our ministry here, and Abe also hosts his own radio program each afternoon from 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time, called the Hamilton Corner. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Doing well. Yourself, brother?
Doing well. Busy, but doing well.
Hey, a lot to talk about with you. Before Fred gets to the story that we want to focus on regarding homeschooling in the state of Virginia, we were discussing before the break, the Democrats are getting desperate, and they're openly desperate for a candidate that can beat President Trump, and Joe Biden seems to be the only one that you cited a poll here.
Yeah, a CNN poll shows that Joe Biden nationwide is still far ahead. In fact, his lead over his nearest competitors is the widest since April. Vice President Joe Biden, former vice president, with 34% of support amongst Democrats, with Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders at 17 and 16%.
So we're just wondering, and this is we didn't tip you off we were going to talk to you about this, but I'm just curious your opinion. it seems to me that maybe the Democrat voters are coming to the realization that none of these other candidates, including Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, have a chance to beat President Trump. Joe Biden is it. It's either Biden or bust, so to speak, at this point. So we got to get on the Biden train. Isn't that reality, though? Don't you think?
In my opinion, I don't think Joe Biden can beat President Trump either. But
okay,
put my opinion aside from that, I think if I were to put on try to understand the minds of a Democrat voter, I think one of the things that has come to the surface in this presidential primary season is that just how far left the majority of the Democrat candidates are is being exposed to the American people.
Yeah.
And while you may get a round of applause amongst, you know, a Democrat primary voting base, the larger swath of the American people step back and say, whoa, we didn't realize these people were that extreme.
Right.
I mean, when you have people literally on a national television debate stage saying they didn't want to use federal income tax dollars to pay for abortions for men. I mean,
yeah,
Julian
Castro said that. And so hearing so-called right-wing pundits say those things for years, now you hear the actual candidate saying these things, many of the American people go, whoa, we didn't know these people were that far whacked out.
Even Bill Maher.
Yeah.
You know, he was on the other day. I can't stand the guy, really, because he hates
Christians. He hates God.
Yeah, but you sort of use him as to understand the voice of the secular left over there. And he was even saying, you know, we can't. These Democrat candidates are too far left, you know, to get elected in the general election. He's pretty far left.
Yeah, I mean, when you consider the most Americans who grew up like in cities in my hometown, we see the things that are crumbling in our city, and you have these candidates saying, hey, we want to use federal tax dollars to pay for health insurance for illegal aliens. I mean,
right. I know.
That defies rationality.
But there's a problem, I think, in the Democrats. The leadership understand this. Biden's way out in this one poll from CNN. But they also understand that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have the under 35 vote.
Right.
And I don't think the under 35 Democrats are going to be really out there campaigning for Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Democratic establishment's in a real bind.
They sure are.
Yeah. There's no Barack Obama out there.
Right.
No, it's not. And then you say that, and then you have some of that under 35 crowd who are being confronted, like, for example, in the last debate with Elizabeth Warren refusing to admit what's obvious to anybody who has a brain and a calculator, her plan for Medicare for All is going to require every taxpayer's taxes to be raised.
Yes.
At least Bernie Sanders will admit that. She won't even admit that. And so you have some who would have previously supported her saying, wait a minute, she has a plan for everything under the sun, but she won't even admit this one detail, and it just smacks of dishonesty is what I'm getting at. Yeah. And some of her opponents are hitting her there. And so even among that group, they see, wait a minute, where do we place our loyalty? And so,
all right, we got this story out of Virginia.
Yeah, a lot of homeschoolers in Virginia. In fact, that is the home of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Virginia, like many other states, have some basic stipulations for homeschoolers. You know, you must prove that you have some kind of curriculum, et cetera, et cetera. However, there is a county in Virginia, Franklin County, that has decided on its own that it's going to add to the state stipulations. Now, some people may say the stipulations are submit birth certificates and proof of residency. Now, some folks may say, well, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is this. If Franklin County, and the lower court has already ruled in favor of Franklin County, but there were arguments before the Virginia Supreme Court the other day. The issue for homeschool legal defense, Abe, if I understand it correctly, is if Franklin County gets away with adding more stipulations to the state statute, then other counties can do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
What next?
Yeah. And the issue is who makes law.
Yeah.
You know, the state legislature in Virginia is the source for determining the standard for truancy laws and things of that nature. individual counties don't have the liberty to add additional legal requirements that have the force of state law. The issue is who makes the law. And so this individual county attempted to add additional. I mean, Virginia has a homeschool statute. They have a statute that governs all things homeschooling. This individual county sought to add additional requirements, increasing the burden on families that make the decision to homeschool unilaterally without legislative action on its own. And so the issue in and of itself has broader implications, because the implications are then in the state of Virginia, you could have 133 different counties that have different homeschooling requirements all across the state. Mm-hmm. And then if that is allowed to stand in that state, what are the implications for other states should that occur? And so it's a fight that definitely has to be fought. And it harkens back to the wars back in the 80s. A lot of people, myself included, I've been a beneficiary because we're a homeschooling family. I've been a beneficiary of others who have fought these battles in the late 70s and the early 80s, because these truancy laws were the standards by which homeschooling was virtually illegal in America back then. A lot of people may not remember that.
Right.
And so HSLDA exists to fight against any types of encroachments on the province of parents in making these educational decisions. And so they've made the right decision to challenge this issue and to make sure that the legal status for the entire state remains consistent across the state. The fight to be fought, if you want to change the standards of the homeschool statute, you have to change the legislation. Counties can't unilaterally and arbitrarily, I would add, increase the burden on homeschooling families.
Well, let me just say two things. First, really quickly, the argument that you just made about homeschooling is one of the ones I use frequently for people who say Christians shouldn't be involved in politics. And many of those are homeschool people. And I say, well, you know why you're able to homeschool is because people went to battle in court and in politics to get that law changed. So that, I'll set that aside. What also seems to be at stake here is if the courts allow this one county to add requirements, then I would think it would open the door for counties to subtract requirements, because that would mean that if we get to decide in on a county level or on a city level what the policy is going to be, then we should be able to subtract as well as add. And at that point, you're no longer governing from the state capitol.
That's right.
And now maybe that's a good thing. Okay, maybe local school boards ought to make all the decisions regarding
all
textbooks.
All things education.
All things education. Well, fine, then let us do that. But if you're going to require us to meet these standards and these requirements, and you can add to it, then we should be able to subtract.
That's a good point. And HSLDA is making that argument that the state of Virginia, via its elected legislators, have already determined how they want to govern the area of education in total, including homeschooling in that state. And it has not granted the counties that authority. Now, if the legislature wants to grant that accounting, the citizens of Virginia want to do that, then you would have to do it in a lawful manner, not with just these individual counties sua sponte on its own initiative saying that we're going to change it regardless of the legal status.
And I'm just guessing that the county may outsmart itself thinking that we can become more restrictive on homeschoolers, but the instrument they're going to use might lead to parents saying, well, guess what? We're not going to teach our kids that homosexuality is normal, natural, and healthy. And we're not going to teach them the sex education, you know, requirements that you have. They may outsmart themselves if they push this too far, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I would call it outdumb themselves.
Yes, I agree.
Hey, by the way, just the topic for another day in terms of a lengthy conversation on this, but homeschooling in the U.S., is that... Is it peaceful out there now, or are there still states that are trying to shut this down?
There are states that are more hostile than others. Immediately would come to mind, New York is a very restrictive state concerning homeschooling. You can still do it, but you have to jump through far more hurdles there than you would have to, say, in Texas or in Mississippi. In Texas, you have to say, we're homeschooling, that's it. So you have, in lots of homeschooling families, know this is something I keep up with, which states have the most restrictive laws, which states have the least restrictive laws. But generally speaking, in almost every state beyond New York, and I would add California to that mix, even though we have a lot of homeschoolers in California, beyond New York and California, it's pretty hospitable to homeschooling right now. and people like HSLDA and others exist to try to maintain that type of comedy across the country.
Mm. I think what has happened too with homeschooling, a lot of people don't realize, a lot of people think it's a Christian thing, homeschooling, but there's other religions now. If you've been looking at the National Spelling Bee over the last several years, a lot of the winners of the National Spelling Bee are like, they come from Hindu families that are right. homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
There's another factor going on in here now that a lot of people don't trust the public school system mm-hmm. to give their kids a good education anymore.
A lot of secular progressives
yes.
want to homeschool their kids because they want their kids to get a good education and they don't trust the local schools to do it.
And here's a reason maybe not to trust the local school. here's the headline, folks. This is a beam me up Scotty moment, all right? Seattle public schools want to teach social justice in math class. And basically the thrust of this is that math has hurt minorities down through the years.
Where did you get this story?
This comes from the National Review.
Pretty respectable
right.
Magazine.
This is the latest in the continuous, I would argue, the application of critical theory, because a lot of this has happened at the collegiate level in English classes, where they no longer require proper grammar in English classes. The University of Washington's chair of the English department announced that they would no longer grade on grammar in English class.
Seriously?
Because that's considered oppressive to minorities?
Yes. I'm not kidding. You can look it up. I'm not kidding at all. And so this is because critical theory, and you guys are familiar with it, it seeks to challenge every institution looking for the oppressive application of it. And so this is just the latest iteration of that. I'm sorry.
And here's the proposed right? policy, according to Education Week, where this was published, would teach students how to, quote, explain how math and technology and or science are connected and how technology and or science have been and continues to be used to oppress and marginalize people and communities of color, as well as to, quote, identify and teach others about mathematicians of color in their various communities, schools, neighborhoods, places of worship, and businesses, etc.
All right, hold on just a second. This is from the – do we have this posted on our
– Yes.
I'm going to find that story about English and send it to you guys, too.
Okay. The headline again that Fred read, Seattle public schools want to teach social justice in math class. That hurts minorities. That hurts minorities, argues Catherine Timpf, who's a writer here. But does this mean that they're going to not teach math and other subjects?
They're gonna carve out time during math class to explain how math oppresses minorities.
Now, what's the argument here?
Plus two is now oppressive?
Yeah.
Equals four?
Now, I can see if their argument is that, and I'm just guessing here, that minorities underperform whites in mathematics classes and don't get jobs in math fields or science, whatever, then I would say, well, if that's true, then the answer is to do a better job teaching math and science to minorities so they can excel. Well,
I think Asians outscore everybody.
Well,
they're a minority.
I'm trying to figure out what the argument yeah. is here. How does the teaching of math oppress anybody? Now, I would say, okay, let me just say, I would have said in high school that teaching math does oppress everybody. Okay, I felt oppressed many times having to study for geometry or algebra 2 trig test. Okay, but if you're going to say it only oppresses minorities, I want to hear the argument.
That's just.
Do you know what the argument is?
Good night.
No. This in 2017, a University of Illinois math education professor explained in writing what she saw as some of the more racist aspects of math, claiming that mathematics itself operates as whiteness. Folks, listen.
So there is no argument.
I don't know if you guys had the chance to listen to this, but this past Friday, my entire program was dedicated to critical theory, critical race theory, and intersectionality.
Good, because that seriously, we need to be up on.
Okay, where can
that
we? Where can folks go listen?
You can go to the AFR.net. Look up pod. Go to the podcast page. Click on the Hamilton Corner. It will be Friday's show, October 18th. I encourage everybody to listen to that because the genesis of this comes from the minds of Antichrist atheistic mindsets. You have Karl Marx as the classical Marxist, as an economic theory. Well, following World War I, Marxists were demoralized because they thought World War I would provide the basis for this uprising of the proletariat against the bourgeoisie. But something happened that you had poor people who found hope in the example in the American Republic to say, hey, I may be poor today, but that doesn't mean I have to remain that way. And so you have these formerly classical Marxists who saw the failures of reverting to it solely as an economic theory and philosophy and realized we need a cultural wedge. We need to get this to the place to where we convince people that they're a perpetual oppressed group. And so they sought to infiltrate the various facets of culture. And by arguing everything from a dynamic of oppressor and oppressed dynamic that says that if you are an oppressor, you are perpetually such. And they sought to hoist this framework on every system, beginning with the children and using this exact same vernacular that has experienced a resurgence. Now, this is not new. It's just experienced a resurgence in modern times. And so we need to know this and understand that. That requires you to now revisit mathematics to find out where's the oppression.
And full disclosure, I'm a Southern Baptist. If you're listening right now and you're a Southern Baptist, you need to go listen to this podcast. Because one of the big controversies coming out of the Southern Baptist Convention meeting last year was a passing of a resolution, Resolution 9. Now, the resolution came in from a pastor in California, and we've covered this in American Family News. The resolution came in from a pastor in California to speak out against critical race theory. But the platform at the Southern Baptist Convention turned it all around. The resolutions committee turned it all around and adopted critical race theory, and this resolution has an analytical tool that could be used to explain racism.
And specifically as an analytical tool to help with the interpretation of the Bible.
Yes. It was passed on the last day of the convention when a lot of the delegates had gone home. But
who was behind that, do you know?
Who was behind it was the resolutions committee. Because, like I say, the resolution that was presented was the exact opposite of what was passed.
Mm-hmm. Well, weren't there a pastor or two fairly well known who's I want to say I remember seeing this image kind of like a meme where he said, I am a white man and I will therefore always be a racist. You guys remember what I'm talking about?
That was a seminary professor.
Yes. A seminary professor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because I'm white, I will therefore always be a racist.
That's right.
And I will have to deal with it all with white privilege.
What does that have to do with the Southern Baptist?
Well, because he was a
Southern Baptist seminary professor.
Oh.
And this is part of what Abe is saying here is that you always, if you're an oppressor, you'll always be an oppressor.
And whether you know it or not, that's another part.
It doesn't
depend on your personal feeling, sentiment, heart condition. It's based on the group that you're born into. It completely eliminates individual's responsibility, individual sin, and expands it to corporate sin. And based on how you're born, you are immediately ascribed into an oppressor or oppressed group.
This is where the idea of white privilege comes from.
That's exactly right.
Because even if you don't recognize it, because you're white, you're part of that oppressor class, you'll never be able to change. That's why you had Hollywood actresses. I can't think of the woman's name right now, but she said, I despise myself for being white. And I have white privilege.
But isn't that racist?
It is racist, and they don't even recognize it. They don't even recognize it. Because someone who stands up to me and tell me, you know what, because of what I look like, I am inherently better than you. That's the core of racism. But because it's couched in these culturally Marxist terms of oppressor and oppressed the dichotomy, that they feel like it's the morally superior thing to acknowledge and check my white privilege.
And the Southern Baptist Convention okayed this.
Resolution 9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They passed it?
Yeah,
they
passed it at the last year's meeting.
So this is going on. I do know more than I act like I know sometimes, folks. But I do this because I want to draw out the questions.
Facilitate discussion.
Yeah, the people that are driving their car have questions like I'm asking you. So, and they may be Southern Baptist, but this is going on inside other Christian denominations. Right. Let me tell you that.
Yeah.
Anyway, where can people read about this, Fred?
They can go to One News Now. We have background stories. Steve Jordahl.
Just type in a search.
Steve Jordahl did stories on Resolution 9. We talked to the pastor who put forward the original resolution. Mm-hmm. He was just as shocked as everybody else.
That they turned it completely around.
Did a 180 on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are forces taking over the Southern Baptist Convention. For those of you who are Southern Baptists, you will not recognize your denomination in 5 years.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, they're going the way of
Episcopal Church, all these
woke progressivism.
Progressivism. Russell Moore and J.D. Greer are heading this up. I know J.D. Greer and Russell Moore have both preached great sermons when it comes to the normal, typical Bible teaching. But in terms of progressivism invading your denomination, it is underway.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
And I just emailed you guys a link to the podcast, the Friday show, if you want to, whatever you want.
Can we post it?
I really would encourage people to listen to that program. I'm so glad you brought this up, Abe, because a lot of people, they hear critical race theory and they just go blank.
Right.
What is that? You explain that in your program.
Yeah.
You've got
and to why it matters.
And why it matters.
You'll find a lot of the vernacular is already prevalent in American culture. You just don't know where it came from.
Right.
Many of us don't know where it came from. And you know, one of the things we should do as Christians is to find out the genesis of these things, because what's happening, the way it's getting into the church, you have people presenting these ideas, critical race theory and other things, as something that they are not. They're not adhering to the traditional definitions and applications to get the foot in the door. And then once the foot is in the door, the applications return to the original definitions and things.
And also it is put forth as a way to combat real issues.
Yes.
Like racism.
Yes.
A real issue. So you have Christians who have a love for all people saying, well, yeah, we need to combat racism. That's a bad thing.
With the love of Jesus Christ.
With the love of Jesus Christ.
And the express purpose of the show was to explain why these ideologies are incompatible with biblical Christianity. Jesus articulated the primary commandments: love God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. We don't need these antichrist, unbiblical tools to teach us how to love our neighbors as ourselves. The scripture is sufficient for that.
Amen. Because if you listen to the people that are promoting a lot of the social justice causes and the people behind it, you see them interviewed on TV, for example, and it's just hatred. It seems to be just coming off of their expressions and the words that they use. You know what I'm saying? Whether they be white, black, or whatever, I'm just saying, whereas a Christian approach to these social problems, you look through a biblical lens. These people have there's no biblical lens to look through. It's kind of like, okay, we need to bring down these people because they did this to these people back then, or they're doing it now. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It just seems to be with these folks, there's no sense of reconciliation. Mm. There's no sense of love, like Dr. King talked about. You know, he used biblical precepts to say that here's how we advance our cause. We love people who do us wrong. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, there's no compute with these folks.
And we have Abe's podcast linked on our Facebook Today's Issues.
And we can link some ONN, One News Now stories.
Okay,
as well.
Good.
On this, what you were talking about with the SBC.
Yes.
Abe, thanks, brother.
My pleasure.
This
gentlemen.
Afternoon, you,
this
Abraham,
afternoon.
You're going to be
right.
on.
That's right. I'll be on.
Hamilton Corner. Join Abe this afternoon at 5:05 Central Time right here on this radio network. We shall return with more of this show in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.